problem with the conversion of the PDF file. That's why half the title is missing. It's actually supposed to be large-scale physics from causal dynamical triangulations, but that bit is missing, as some other things are. But I'll try to just say everything that's missing, so it should be okay. Okay, first off, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak and the opportunity to learn so many interesting things this week. So as I said, my title is Large-Scale Physics from Causal Dynamical Triangulations, and I hope to say some things which will be relevant for similar problems which come up in other areas of quantum gravity, other approaches to quantum gravity, especially other path integral approaches. So everybody's got their own ideas about what kind of approach to quantum gravity will be the most successful, and you've probably got your own opinions already about this causal dynamical triangulations approach, whether it has the right configurations, the right symmetries, or perhaps you believe that there should be a fundamental cutoff, or X, Y, and Z. But if you were at Jan Ambion's talk, you'll know that this is an exciting time for these kinds of theories, because it means, as he showed you, we don't have to argue about whether this theory is capable of producing GR in some semi-classical regime anymore. We can actually go and ask the computer, or at least we can ask it some small questions which are relevant to that eventual goal. So far the results have been good, but there's only a handful of such things, so we can't really claim to have any confidence that that is the case, yet we've only got a few relevant observables for that aim. But what I thought would be a really great project which would be to see how far we can really push these simulations, how much physically relevant data can we get out of these theories to show whether this theory is actually producing GR in the correct limit. Okay, so what I'm going to do is describe this goal in a little more detail, describe the similarities and differences to the same kinds of problems that you know about already in lattice quantum field theory, and I'll propose a coarse graining scheme which I think is suitable for CDTs and practical to calculate with, which is supposed to be a tentative solution to these problems. And well, when I wrote these slides, I was being wildly optimistic about how much I'd be able to do in these simulations in 2 weeks. When I got them set up, it was only a few weeks ago, so I said I was going to give some tentative results. I'll tell you how I set these things up, and I do have a few things to say, at least, about how I apply these things to the three-dimensional model, which I'm using as a stepping stone to the more physically interesting 4D case. So I said I was going to get information which is relevant at large scales, which I'm going to compare to GR. So what kinds of information is this? Well, first of all, they've got to be generally covariant observables. I hope with this audience I don't need to justify that too much. The very aim of this is to try and see if space-time comes out of this approach. I don't want to put in any external sort of frame or anything like that. They've got to be possible to define in this discrete setting of CDTs, which are triangulations. And so if I have a continuum expression, I need to know how to discretize it. They've also got to be practical to calculate, and so far that's meant by computer simulations, at least in 4D. So I want to have something that's possible to practical to use in that sense. Perhaps more interestingly, the most interesting out of these four criteria is that they must be relevant things when probing the system at large scales. And that one really takes some thinking about. So a good example of these things is something that Jan mentioned very briefly on Tuesday, the spectral dimension, which is the dimension that you can derive from the spectrum of the Laplacian of the geometry. And it's arguably successful in all these four respects. In respect to the fourth one, it's supposed to be the it's arguably the dimension which is relevant for fields propagating on this geometry at different scales. So that's why it's supposed to be relevant when probing the system at large scales. Unfortunately, I mean, that's one thing and it's a good thing, but it doesn't really give you a general, you don't get from that a general scheme for getting back the large scale geometry. There's lots of other information in the spectrum, but we somehow or other ways to define the curvature and so on in that way fell foul of either two or three here. So I'm looking for some general scheme, a so-called coarse graining scheme, to get back the interesting observables that I can compare to general relativity. And these problems, of course, occur in more standard lattice theories, lattice quantum field theories, or the mathematically equivalent statistical field theories. And I've got a very brief, simplistic overview of that. So here on the right-hand side, you can see some configuration on a lattice, and I want to know how to get back information which is relevant at large scales. And there's a number of ways of doing this. Perhaps the most simple is just to think of observables. So these gray shades are supposed to indicate some variables living on this lattice. So I want to just use observables which depend on the variables on every nth row and column of the lattice. So if I remove every second row and column, I get a similar lattice with a larger lattice spacing. And I just want to ask questions which correspond to these remaining variables. Now there's supposed to be some expression for the for expectation values here, but that dropped off the transparency somehow. But if you're going to sum over, if you're not going to ask questions about the other variables, you may as well sum over them in your expression for these expectation values before you come to calculate the expectation value itself. And somehow or other, that's a very rough way of expressing this idea of effective actions for lattice theories. So this very simple idea leads to some very powerful techniques in this case, and they've got there's a very nice and simple connection to what you do in practice in that case. So I want to do something similar in quantum gravity. I want to configuration in my path integral, which I call a fine-grained configuration, I want to produce a coarse-grained configuration which has all of the information which is relevant at large scales, the same as the fine-grained one, but just takes out the information which is short-scale information. So something very similar to that Kadanoff blocking I just showed you. And people have thought about these things, of course, in other approaches. Fortuny-Markopoulou and Robert Ockel have thought about this kind of thing in spin foams, and also Raphael Sorkin and David Rideout thought about coarse-graining causal sets and came up with a nice generally covariant scheme in that case. And one of them, so people noticed a lot of differences from that background-dependent case. Firstly, and most importantly, we can't just produce another copy of the same lattice with a larger lattice spacing. Here, the lattice is the configuration. Every piece of geometrical information is stored in the connectivity of the lattice. The lattice is dynamical, so therefore the coarse-graining scheme must act non-trivially on the lattice structure. So that's an important thing. Just to bring that home even further, as Jan said, the dimension can be a scaling quantity in quantum gravity, which is highly non-standard. So maybe we need the coarse-graining to be that general, that we can actually change the dimension over different scales. The causal set coarse-graining actually does that, so that's something that came to mind when I was doing this. We have to decide, and this is perhaps the most important one and the one I want people to remember, we have to decide what is relevant at large scales. And this is another thing which comes out very nicely and simply in the Kadanoff blocking scheme. So there, as I showed you, you're removing every nth row and column of the lattice, or keeping every nth row and column of the lattice and throwing the rest away. So what you're doing in effect is removing the high frequency information from the configuration. And that corresponds very neatly to what you actually do in real life. For instance, when you look at a glass of water, it looks transparent to you because you're probing at the micro scale. The fluctuations are on the nanoscale. So that's a really nice connection between the theory and the practice in that case. But we don't have such a thing, I don't think, in quantum gravity yet, and we need to think about that. How do we define when two geometries are indistinguishable from each other at some scale epsilon? Martin Reuter gave us a certain answer to that question. You might ask a lot of questions about this, like should we work completely in a generally covariant fashion in the Lorentzian side? Is it okay to work with the Wick-rotated Euclidean geometries? Do you want to include ideas of sort of non-local connections at microscales, which you have to coarse-grain out? There's all kinds of questions you might ask here, and that's an important thing, because if you had two coarse-graining schemes which gave you different results, the only criterion for deciding which, if any, is right, is a physical criterion. So it would be nice to think of some nice Gedanken experiments for that point. What I've actually done is just shot first and ask questions later. I've come up with a coarse-graining scheme. I want to see if I can actually do any calculations with it, and then I'm going to see how far I can go with that and compare it to other things which I hope to do along these lines. And another consideration, which is just for this specific approach, a CDT with large lattice spacing is not a good approximation to a smooth geometry. So I don't want to just produce another CDT with larger lattice spacing from a fine-grained CDT. As I increase the lattice spacing larger and larger, I'd eventually end up with some CDT with very large very large edge lengths, and such an equilateral triangulation doesn't really describe nice smooth spacetimes. So we need a new way to extract large-scale information from geometries. And luckily there were a couple of ideas floating around in quantum gravity already that I could steal to use for this purposes, pioneered by Luca Bombelli et al., ways of statistically sampling geometries. So I'm trying to come up with a few observables to show you a general way of extracting large-scale observables, and to do that I'll do some statistical sampling. So I have to describe to you a few methods for doing that, and a concept called Delaunay triangulations. So this is a way to get a simplicial complex from a set of points in a metric space. And I'm going to use this to sample the geometry. So first of all, I have to break up. So, well, the metric space I've chosen to show you for obvious reasons of practicality is a bit of a two-dimensional plane. And the set of points are these red points. I'll call them seed points. So I'm going to get my simplicial complex. The first step is to break up this metric space into Voronoi neighborhoods, which are these things. A Voronoi neighborhood of a seed is the region which is closer to that seed than any other seed. So if you see this region here bounded by these blue lines, is every point in here is closer to that seed than any other one. Now I can simply derive a simplicial complex by, well, for instance, I'll add edges wherever two Voronoi neighborhoods, wherever their boundaries share points. So wherever two regions touch, like here, I'll put an edge here as well and here. And I'll do the same thing for higher dimensional simplices. So whenever three regions touch, like here, I'll put a triangle. Wherever four touch, I'll put a tetrahedron, etc., etc. Now, in this two-dimensional case, you already see something interesting. For a generic placement of points, you don't see any four things meeting at one point. And that tells you something about the dimensionality, actually, which I'll go back to if I have time. So here's the resulting simplicial complex. I'll just remove those lines so you can see it. In this case, it actually does turn out to be a triangulation, hence the name of this process. And that's actually generically true for Euclidean manifolds of constant curvature, so that you'd get a triangulation of a sphere back if you did this process on the sphere, for instance. And that's also true, generically speaking, if the curvature scale is long on the scale of the typical distance between these points, as in a specific sense, which is in a paper by Luca Bombelli and his collaborators, which I'll talk about in a minute. So that's sort of the process. I just want to describe it schematically as a function del that takes, or del, that takes metric spaces or a subset of points on a metric space to a simplicial complex. And I'm not keeping any information here apart from just the simplicial complex itself, a bunch of simplices and the connections between them. There's no length information, anything like that. Okay, so how do I, first of all, I'll describe how I get observables from these things, and then I'll describe to you how you can get back things like effective curvature from these observables. So here's my very long expression. Up here is that function I just showed you. M is now supposed to be some metric space or a Euclidean manifold, and Pi is a set of points on it, and I just construct DEL from that in the way I just showed you. So I get from this set of points on a metric space a simplicial complex. From that, I get this F is supposed to be a function to real numbers, so some invariant of the complex. For instance, the average valency of vertices in that complex, or the highest dimension of a simplex that's in there, or something of that nature. But this is a very general kind of observable, so it should be, because the set of them is supposed to be my coarse graining. Right, so then that's not an observable, of course, just this chunk on its own, because it depends on this set of points. So what I need to do is sum over the positions of those points with respect to the volume measure, and that's what this whole long chunk is supposed to be, just summing over the positions of all n points that I've put on the manifold. And that n is supposed to be related to the scale that I'm looking at. So you should think about it as being the more points there are, the more detail I'm seeing. So there's some scale involved in these observables. And really, I want to think about a density of points rather than a total number. That makes more sense. Okay. So before I go on to tell you how to get geometry back from these things, I'll just mention that they satisfy some of my criteria that I showed you at the beginning, at least. They're generally covariant observables. They can be estimated by random sampling. Oh, this is important, actually, because this might look like a horrible expression, all these integrals, how will I calculate such a thing? In fact, they can be estimated very accurately in some cases just by randomly sampling the positions of points. So instead of actually going and calculating the integrals, I'll just take a representative sample of the positions of the points by doing a random point process, a binomial point process, and then calculating the Delaney triangulation which results from that. And then if the variance is low, I can very easily get a good estimation of that. In fact, I'm interested in the ones which have a low variance anyway, because they're the ones I consider to be good coarse-grained information. They don't fluctuate all the time when you move the points around. So that's rather lucky. Okay, so I'll now go on to explain why I conjecture that these things are relevant when probing the system at large scales. It's just a conjecture, and as I said, it's just a heuristic picture at the moment, because without a very good definition of what it means to probe at large scales, it has to be a little bit heuristic at this stage. But there are some theorems to back up what I'm saying. So as I said, that paper by Luca Bombelli, Alejandro Carici and Oliver Winkler, in that paper they conjectured that at least in the case where the density of points that you've put into the manifold is large on the scale of the curvature, the random Delaunay complexes, so if I just randomly put the points in and generate such a complex, those things capture all of the large-scale geometrical information that you need from the manifold, which is a really strong statement. And they went a long way to proving this in the 2D case and produced some results in other cases as well. One of the very nice results, for example, in two dimensions, is that the average scale of curvature is related to the average valency of the vertices. So here I've done the process on a two-dimensional sphere, and the valency on there is supposed to get smaller the less points you put on. So if you keep the density of points constant, as you increase the size of the sphere, you'll get a larger valency, and that tells you what the curvature is. And I found that that's true just by doing some simulations of my own. I found that that was true for spheres, at least, in three and four dimensions as well. So that gives us already an expression for a kind of scaling effective curvature. And I thought that was a nice place to start here. 5 minutes, okay. I'm running behind. So I'll skip on quickly. So I've told you why I think they have the large-scale information. I have to justify why I think the small-scale information is missing from these things. Well, first of all, you can see there's only a discrete amount of information if I take a finite number of samples, so that's a good thing. But that doesn't really do the trick. I have to tell you a heuristic argument here. Now, I showed you that all the information is in whether these Voronoi neighborhoods touch each other or not. So if the average distance between points is very large on the scale of the fluctuations you're likely to see, those boundaries between two neighboring Voronoi regions are likely to be very big. So some macroscopic thing like that isn't just going to disappear because you make some small-scale deformation of the manifold, I hope. You might ask me, well, what if really tiny ones appeared? That would be something like these non-local links. Then I'd have to modify the scheme to get rid of those things, but since I'm running short on time, I won't describe that. At least I'll be able to see if that happens or not by doing simulations, which is the happy situation we're in, as I said at the beginning. Okay, so it was... I've been actually applying this, and the good news is that I can actually calculate these things, at least. So the time it takes to do a typical coarse graining, the requisite number of times to work out, say, the average valency, is much shorter than the time it actually takes to get configurations from the CDT simulation. So that's quite nice. And that's one of the reasons you do these coarse graining things, in fact, is in order to simplify calculations. So I was glad to see that that happened. Now, I really wished I'd had a beautiful diagram to show you like Dan Christiansen or David Rideout had in their talks where they showed you these things with very small error bars, but I didn't manage to produce one in time. All I can tell you is that, it works, I can do it, and the things I was calculating didn't seem to diverge, at least to the accuracy I was looking at so far, but if you find anything I've said rather vague, then you can look in the papers which I'll produce later on in the year to find out the details. What I've actually done, I should describe what I've done. I've in the 3D model, the only relevant solution to the Einstein equations is a sphere. So I'm basically comparing the results of coarse graining the CDTs to the results I'd get from doing the same process, calculating those observables for a sphere, and to see if they match up correctly. That was the basic idea behind this. So I'm calculating those observables in a fully non-perturbative path integral in that case. And I found that they do seem to converge. So that's good news. I'll tell you later on in the research what values they get and whether they seem correct or not. Okay, so the conclusions are that, well, I've just showed you a scheme for coarse graining CDTs using statistical geometry of the type that's been used before in loop quantum gravity. They were using it actually to define semi-classical states there, but I'm using it for a different purpose. And the simulations are ongoing in 3D, so I apologize that I didn't have any startling new results to tell you. So the things I really want to do are compare this idea of when things are indistinguishable on large scales coming from this Voronoi process to, say, the Gramov-Hausdorff distance or spectral properties such as Martin Reuter mentioned, and really get to grips with what the physical aptness of coarse graining means in the case of geometry. I want to get more statistical geometry results in three and four dimensions. Like I said, I know how to get back the effective curvature and I know how to get back the dimension and some other things, but it would be really nice to have more results about how the curvature varies over the manifold and things like that. So these results haven't been forthcoming yet. Luckily, I can simulate very easily a Delaney process on a sphere, and that's exactly what I need in three dimensions and seemingly four dimensions for the simulations. So that's very nice. That's very serendipitous that I can do that, and I hope to do that. And of course, I want to move on to do the more physically relevant four-dimensional simulations and just see if I have enough distance between the discreteness scale and the cosmological scale in these models to get back good results, putting my coarse graining scale somewhere in between. Hopefully the simulations are now big enough that I can do that, and I can really start to get to grips with getting more information about whether this theory has GR as a good approximation in some semi-classical regime. So thanks, that's all I had to say.
I think if you don't understand completely what you mean by coarse graining, you see, as you mentioned, if you were doubling, say, lattice spacings in CDT, that's not really what you want to do because you won't be getting as much geometry. So how does that work here in the Nolan lattices?
Right, so, yeah, so I guess that's a question that could occur here, because I was saying on the one hand, well, Delaney triangulations, they're just a simplicial complex with no edge information on them, therefore they're bad. And then I showed you something which was, again, a simplicial complex with no edge information on it. So that question obviously arises. Now, the thing is here that it's not that that thing is supposed to be an equilateral triangulation like a CDT. So it's really, you've got to sort of change your view of what these simplicial complexes mean. In this case, they're just some statistical sampling. So in the case, for instance, of the average valency, you can get back a good approximation to the average valency, which doesn't have any sort of, which isn't sort of only valued on a certain set. It's a proper real number, just by taking a lot of samples. So it's more like I'm doing some statistical sampling of the geometry and just getting back some discrete set of data from which I can calculate the observables, than really thinking about one of these things as being the coarse graining, if that helps. Good.
Any other question? Comment? Well, I think that was an experiment.